Hello there, right bookend Peter here. Just a slight PSA before starting episode 15, Fish Shape Object, where we read chapter 11 of The Way the Stars Fall Rebirth. Just in case you didn't hear the end of the last episode of The Eye of Argon, maybe you were saving that as its separate treat, or didn't want to get interrupted while reading the Lewis Stockton epic, but regardless, this following episode was actually recorded before we recorded any of The Eye of Argon, for a selection of different reasons. But yeah, so if anything seems weird this episode, it's because it was literally months ago. So, without further ado, back to me and Louis in the past. Carry on, guys.
They say everyone has a book inside them, and often that's where it should stay. I really can't help but be aghast that the author wants you to pay. But we're just a pair of absolute bookends, you don't want to be like us. So if you want to read, pick some quality literature rather than this dross.
Hello, welcome to Two Absolute Bookends, where we read books so bad you should burn them before reading. This is episode 11, Fist Shape Object, and discussing his military mantra with me is Louis.
Hello.
And this week, we're reading Chapter 11 of The Way the Stars Fall Rebirth by Lewis Stockton. Please support the author, who's just published a new short story on his website. So, in this chapter, we get a little bit of the plot moving on. Jack's been speaking to the insurrectionists, and they've been taking him towards the base as discussed. As in the end of the last chapter, they've approached the base, and they've now let the insurrectionists loose of the controls to try and contact them. After passing sensor blooms, they approached the base and got to meet the insurrectionist leader, who had a little bit of a fracas with Jack due to not entirely unreasonable things we'll get into, but ultimately decides that it's in their best interest to work together for now. And essentially, they start working together a little bit and pooling their stuff, bit of a knowledge share, while Jack and Tona get more intimate as they repair and upgrade the Tranquility. So, Louis, what did you think of this chapter?
Yeah, we get a bit more plot than usual. It's a longer chapter than what we've had. The last few chapters have sort of been two or three pages. This one's probably about double that. So yeah, we get a bit more actual content, but just really boring, to be honest.
I think we both agree that we expect this to be a short one, but, well, we've said that before.
Yeah, it's odd how given how long this chapter is, how little there is actually to say about it.
Yeah, like, comparatively, like, even if it does end up being long, you should expect it to be longer than however long it ends up, basically. Because it's quite a long chapter for this book, and there's just not too much to talk about in the scheme of things. Oh, and also, I just want to put it out there now. If my audio's a little weird this week, you would not believe the Rube Goldberg machine that is my recording setup this week. So just, I think it's fine, but
yeah,
bear with me
fine. If
not. Yeah, but you're not listening through the same microphone, Louis. That's
true.
How fucked up it is. Anywho, where do we begin?
So I think we begin where we left off two chapters ago now, because there was like the chapter before this was a little side story with Tiberius Hunter.
Oh yeah, so, of course.
Yeah. So we're joined back into the Tranquility with the blue giant star, the light glowing throughout the bridge, as Jack taps his fingers on his armrest again. That's how he like solves all his problems. Taps his fingers on the armrest.
Yeah, problem. Got to have your little thinking ticks, you know, like slapping your arm, swilling water in your mouth.
Yeah, that's
all
true.
All sorts of things, yeah.
Everyone's got their thing. And we meet the insurrectionists, the group of three insurrectionists that Jack freed from the prison. And we learn that they have a leader, apparently. Major Joseph, or Josel Nezel. Weird name.
Very, a bit weird. I'll actually, I usually pick up Lewis on giving characters long names like this and never mentioning them again, but he does actually, his name does come up throughout the rest of the chapter and a bit of the next chapter, so, well,
nice.
It's actually stuck with him rather than giving him a name and a backstory then never picking him up again, which is the usual de rigueur here, so well done. Yeah, so they decide to contact the insurrectionists using something called a sensor bloom, which is apparently, like, sonar?
Yeah, pretty much. But it can tell you not only the direction and distance, but also what they are, I think.
Maybe?
I think that when it says here that it would rebound back to the ship sensor panels, showing the position of the ship but by direction and distance, but not if class nor armament. That's why sensors were created. So I think he was previously describing sonar. And then sensors were made to be able to tell what it is. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Either way, I think he goes into way too much detail.
Say that, but like, it does go on quite a bit, but I'm still not exactly sure quite how it's supposed to work.
He basically went into too much detail, but not in like not the right detail. Like, he just rambles on and on and on, and then you get to the end of it, and you're like, yeah, what is it sonar?
Yeah, like I know it's like sonar, but with energy rather than sound. I don't know quite how that transpires, and I'm also not sure how this is sending a code to them either.
Mm.
I mean, like, is he like sending out like bursts of energy that'll be bouncing off things? I mean, I'm assuming it's still bouncing off things if it's like sonar.
Yeah, and there's some deal with it, like it. If they send it and then they get a message back at a different time, it's... I don't know, I don't... He goes into it a bit later on about how they get a message back that's not at the right time or something, and that's weird. I don't know. I don't understand it, just like you do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like... That's basically like... Yeah, like, I agree. It's just, he goes into all this detail, but it's still not clear how it works. It's like, he really should have left it at less and just been like, it's a future sonar, basically, you know. It's sonar with energy. I still probably would have been like, I'm not sure quite how that works, but that also would have been all I had to say about it. Just like, sonar with energy. I mean, is fires off energy? I guess it could work.
So I guess they're doing this to open a communication channel between them and the insurrectionists, right?
Well, I think so. I think this is also meant to be, like, quite archaic. So, like, they're implying, regardless, even if it is, like, future sonar, like, I think they're kind of implying that you wouldn't usually just go out here and send out, like, waves of this, whatchamacallit energy.
Mm.
So that's, like, part of their, like, yo, we're cool with the insurrectionists, you know, we're sending out a message in this,
See, what I don't get about that, then, is that it says here that Hollister was skeptical about the entire thing. He was a man of the mantra that you meet and fight your foes and allies face to face, and all this cloak and dagger was none of his style. How is this cloak and dagger if it's... They're literally, like, beaming a thing saying, hey, we're approaching you right now. This is who we are. How's that that's exactly what his just mantra like, yeah, is.
Like we know you're in there somewhere, you know. Come out and talk to us.
Surely Cloak and Dagger would be not sending out this sensor bloom.
Yeah, and like trying to sneaky up inside there. Who's he disapproving of? Is he disapproving of like the Tranquility having to do this, or the insurrectionists for making them do this to meet them?
I just don't even get this at all, because then he voices these concerns to Jack, and then it says Jack nodded and explained that it would not be the best way to undermine an empire if you stood in plain sight. Is that not what they're doing? I genuinely don't understand what's going on. From what I get, they're sending out a signal saying, you know, basically saying we come in peace, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the insurrectionist major or whatever said they will not give away their position unless we send a code to them. So it seems like they're being quite open with them. You know, they're trying to get access, but then Jack saying we shouldn't stand in plain sight. I just don't understand.
I know. I think maybe that we're reading too much into this, and it's meant to be Hollister saying that he's disapproving of the insurrectionists' way of waging war, like in hiding in this field and making the Tranquility jump through all these hoops to even meet them. I think that's probably what's being implied, even though as both Jack and Hollister agrees, they've got no way of winning meeting them in open battle.
Also,
so why the fuck would they do that?
Also, that's a catchy mantra he's got. That you should meet and fight your foes and allies face to face, and all this cloak and dagger was none of his style.
Also, fight your foes and allies.
Yeah.
What?
Sometimes you just gotta,
And all this cloak and dagger stuff was none of his style. Even though, like, a little while before, he was cutting people's throats.
Yeah, not face to face.
Yeah, from behind. To make his way to rescue Jack and all that, you know? Sam Fishering this shit up.
Also, this is a bit of a nitpick.
Not his style.
It's a bit of a nitpick, but a mantra is, strictly speaking, a sort of a phrase or a word or a sound that you repeat, you know? Right?
Yeah.
Not a, like a sort of sentence. Imagine, like, saying that during yoga, like, as you breathe in. Meet and fight your foes and allies face to face, and all their cloak and dagger was none of his style. And breathe out. Soothing.
Doesn't it really make you feel one with the Hollister?
Yep. Gotta love Hollister.
Have a beer. Be yourself.
Never again.
Too much mantra. But yeah, Hollister's objections are bizarre, hypocritical, and nonsensical, basically. Managed to, like, do all three at once.
That's Hollister.
Is there anything he can't do? No, I can't stay mad at you, Hollister.
Be himself.
Be yourself, Hollister. Hashtag Team Hollister.
Yep.
Yeah, I also found it a little bit odd that, you know, they did just let the insurrectionists loose at the controls to do all this. Like, I suppose it makes sense, because, I mean, they're basically in the insurrectionist's mercy, even if this does go all right. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know, I still find it weird that he'd even be, like, trained on the Tranquility's controls.
Yeah.
I still would have thought that it would have made more sense for him just to be, like, advising one of their actual bridge crew what to do here.
Well, maybe the technology that they've, you know, they've been, like, beamed into this dimension or whatever it is. Maybe the technology that's on the ship is, you know, the insurrectionists are more familiar with it because it's part of their universe, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, that's never implied anywhere.
No.
Like, you know, like, the Tranquility does seem to be, like, the most high-tech ship we ever see.
And also, this is, like,
anywhere.
Isn't this, like, the first we're seeing? Like, if the insurrectionists are that sort of helpful and know that much, why are we only seeing them now? Surely, you know, he's like, spent so much time with Toner, like, that he's not even spending time with these insurrectionists who could give him a lot of information and advice.
Well, he does mention later on that he has spent some time chatting them. So he isn't just shacked up with Toner, even though that's probably taking up a disproportionate amount of his time.
Yeah, and as I said, I think we said they find that the insurrectionist HQ is in an asteroid belt. It's actually on an asteroid.
Yeah.
And they make their way through this asteroid belt and are sort of guided in by some little ships. They go in a shuttle.
Yeah.
From what I can understand, they take a sort of group in a shuttle. So the Tranquility doesn't actually make it to the asteroid. They go halfway in a shuttle, right? Because it's just the shuttle ride down.
Yeah.
So,
I think you're right.
Later,
that's
Yeah, because later on, they say, you know, like, this Tranquility can't leave because we want to make sure you haven't given away your position. But unless it's, like, come into docking after the shuttle's gone in or something, but...
Well, like, I don't know. Like, the Tranquility's meant to be pretty big. Maybe it was just too large to park actually inside one of these asteroids.
I mean, it was...
And I guess by not leaving, they just mean you got to keep hiding within the asteroid belt, basically.
I mean, some of these asteroids were hitting the Tranquility and it wasn't denting it, so it's obviously much better than their old ship because of the micron of dust.
Yeah.
I mean, what a difference. Like, seriously, a micron of dust is 3% hull damage, and these asteroids, where some of them as big as moons, are able to hit it, and it's just like, no damage reported.
Yep.
None. Not even to the shield. Like, obviously there's this kinetic barrier, but that's not even damaged.
Yeah. Well, you remember what happened to that guy that headbutted his kinetic barrier.
Yeah, that's true.
Turned to dust.
Of course, Jack picked Toner to go on to the Insurrectionist HQ with him for some reason.
Yep, you know, perfectly qualified for... I mean, they don't even know what this meeting's going to be like. How this is going to play out at all.
I mean, Is it explained why they're there? Because obviously they met these insurrectionists, and is it just like intrigue that they're going, or?
Basically because they had nowhere else to go in this galaxy.
Right.
It's like they've made enemies of the Empire,
yeah,
by, you know, fucking up the combat observatory station.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a given. So they're like, well, like, as the chapter sort of like byline goes, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. They're just like, do you guys want to be our allies then? Because we kind of fucked it over with the big guys.
I guess so.
When Jack threatened to put Fargus on his fat ass, so
yep,
there's no coming back from that.
And I'm guessing the insurrectionists see maybe even the addition of this battleship would be you know, a good thing to their cause.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, everyone seems to be creaming their pants over how good it is. You know, everyone's like, this is going to be our flagship. And it does seem pretty dangerous when it actually decided to fight the other time.
Mm-hmm. Jack leaves. So he takes Toner on, but he leaves Hollister to look after the ship while he's away. Team Hollister.
Why doesn't he send Hollister to negotiate for him?
Yeah. He's clearly better in every, like, way.
Like, even aside from that, I'd say they've either got to kind of, like, head in here with, like, a show of strength, or head in, like, just trying to, like, throw at their mercy, you know? But they've sort of, like, got their ship floating up there with a dude in it, going down with an armed group, but then they're just, like, but then it's just Jack standing there. And it's going to be entirely, like, not enough if they decided to capture them, just like on the combat observatory station.
You know, what's the point in bringing like a small group of soldiers? Just go peacefully, because that small group of soldiers is not going to be enough.
Exactly, that's not going to do shit if anything goes down there. Just like it didn't do shit last time.
Literally,
you know,
literally going to the insurrectionist HQ. Like, it's not like some shitty deep space combat observatory station. With Fargus.
Like, yeah, this is going to be with, like, all of their toughest guys. And they're just like, we don't want the same thing to happen again.
Yeah.
This time, we bring 8 men.
Yeah, let's not learn from, like, how well it went last time.
You know, it's like, yeah, I'd like, either, like, insist on, like, having some sort of, like, meeting by proxy or, like, via some sort of, like, satellite comlink just to, like, at least get an idea what each other is about. Or I would just, you know, like, go down there with on my own and, like, some of the people that are actually useful envoys that he takes with him and just be like, we're kind of at your mercy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in a universe that wants to kill us. You might be our friends. Again, it's a weird and impotent gesture going down there with a small, like, handful of security guards.
Yeah, also what I like is when they get there, it says, after several security scans, Jack and his fellow team members were taken to a meeting room. Surprisingly enough, they were allowed to keep their weapons. What was the security scanning like?
Just,
I don't get
just
it.
Just finding out what weapons they had.
Yeah, I guess
like,
so.
I don't know.
But it's just odd.
I mean, like, they could see the weapons. Maybe they were, like, seeing if one of them had a bomb strapped to them or something.
Yeah, maybe. Why did they... Yeah, just, why have they got their weapons? Why are they allowing them to keep their weapons? It's just odd.
I mean, I guess they might be going by the same, like, mentality that I am.
If,
just like,
yeah,
well, there's shit all they can do.
It feels like,
you know, let them keep their weapons.
It feels like both parties are just terrible at this, like, arrangement. They're so, like, I don't know, unaligned with each other.
Yeah, they're just so inept at arranging any kind of deal. Which, I mean, does bear out, you know. We saw Jack's attempt to talk to Fargus, and the insurrectionist leader doesn't do much better when we finally meet her in a minute. Yeah, like, this wasn't a big one, but just something I found funny was just the amount that they use the word team in, like, a section of it. It's just like, picking up Toner and several other team members. He was met by a security team.
Yeah, a similar-looking security team, kitted out, ready to take out the team in any hostiles occurred, met the team.
Yeah. If anything happened while Jack and the team were down on the surface, Hollister would be able to handle it. Just, you know, lots and lots of team.
Yeah, it's important.
Mm.
So, yeah, when they wait in the meeting room, and after an arn, apparently, this woman turns up in a old Admiral uniform, but with the Imperial tags removed. And the first thing she does is punch Jack straight in the face. Well, that's what we think, because it says that all we know is that Jack suddenly found himself face up on the decking. Decking? Well, I just realised, why is there decking in this meeting room? There's like a barbecue. What's going on?
Well, you know, they were waiting for an arm.
Yeah. In the instant he had blinked, Jack had noticed a fist-like object coming towards his face. Not a fist, a fist-like object. Why be so, like, obtuse?
Fake. Yeah. Yeah.
Why not just say, like, she punched him in the face? Why a fist-like object? I think that's how dumb Jack is. He's like, what is that in the split second? Like,
what's coming at me? I don't like it. Yeah. It's fish-shaped.
What? Like, that is some way to start a meeting, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's...
Like, she's walked into this room and they're all armed.
Yeah, like, because nobody bothered to de-arm anyone.
The first thing she does is, like, why? Why is she hitting him in the face? It's so...
I know, it's just so...
Didn't...
Stupid. Yeah. Like, you know, like, I would say that when she starts basically getting annoyed at Jack, she has a point, but why would she punch him?
She's supposed to be, like, a sort of, you know, the leader of the insurrection, so you've got to imagine she's got to be, like, pretty steady-headed. Yeah,
at least a modicum of people management skills. Just a tiny bit. But this is just... why is everyone in this book so bad at just negotiating? Like, you know, Fargus and Jack ending up in a bitch fight after 2 minutes of talking, and now this woman just coming out and punching him before they've even explained what they're about. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it turns into a bit of a Mexican standoff when they're all pointing their guns at each other.
Even Tona had a pistol aimed right at the commander's head.
Yeah, that's when you know shit's serious. What's a Gorum fool, by the way?
I think that's sort of like trying to be like Goram, as in a sort of a...
Goddamn?
A sort of like regional pronunciation of goddamn.
It's so, am I being stupid or is that really not obvious? Like, why? Well, for a start, it's capitalised. So I thought that it was some sort of, like, race or something.
I've come across that before. It being capitalised is weird.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't help.
I'm sure that when I've seen it written before, it had, like, an apostrophe in it or somewhere to make the pronunciation a bit clearer.
Yeah, like,
that it was sort of like a...
I genuinely thought it was some sort of, like, species or some sort of racial slur or something.
You goddamn Gorams.
Yeah.
Go back to Goramistan.
Get out of here.
Sleeping with our jobs.
So, I've got a question here. When is it appropriate to use hell with double L and hell with one L? Because here it says, like, hell am I lowering this weapon with two L's. But we've seen it in the past where it's 1L.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's author error. I mean,
is it 2Ls in your book?
To be honest, I'm not sure which one's the author error. I'll be honest with you. they're both contenders. I think we'll have to I'll have to at some point see which one comes up more, 1L or 2L, and I guess then just through the numbers we'll be able to decide which one's the typo. But yeah, I can't think of any good reason why you'd have a variant spelling like that and then not use it. I was going to say, I don't know, maybe this is just like a common thing though, because apparently when talking to Josel, he told Jack that the captain packs one good arm, and in a world with blasters, I can't imagine, you know, how often that comes up unless you're punching just unarmed people. Yeah. Out in fits of pique.
That's true.
So, you know, maybe this is just like standard operating procedure in the insurrectionist base. You're just like, hello, Captain, we're back from a mission. Just like, bang, you idiot, you came back to our base. Stop doing this. But I mean, I know, I make fun, but she does have a point, though. He really shouldn't have flown the Tranquility. Like, right there. I mean, like I was saying, I find it hard to believe there isn't some kind of cell-like structure, that this is their only outpost. It does seem insane just going to the HQ straight away, like, you know, with, you know, there are people following you. It isn't going to engender their sort of like them liking you, just driving straight on into their base. I mean, this is on the three insurrectionists who are with him as much as Jack. He was just going where they told him to. But why would they want to do it? They're the ones with the most to lose. This is their universe and organization.
Why didn't she punch them? If anyone, they should be punched.
Exactly, it's their fault more than Jack's. He was just doing what he was told in this case. I mean, you can possibly say that he should have, like, mentioned this, but it's way more on them than anyone else. And just, yeah, why would he take them straight to their base? For one thing, he doesn't know how trustworthy Jack and all of that is. I mean, yeah, he broke them out of prison, but, you know, it was all mildly self-interested, as he should have found out when talking to Jack. Jack had nothing else going for him.
And he wasn't exactly the friendliest person when he was leading them out. I think at one point he threatened them that they would shoot the window.
Yeah, he threatened to blast them all out of a fucking window, like you say, if they did anything out of line, risk their lives to go back and rescue Tona, despite the fact he had no idea if she was alive or dead or where she was on the ship.
Yep.
Well, he had a vague idea. He'd heard where she was supposed to be, though he didn't know. I don't know how he could have known where on the ship that was, but he did hear where she was supposed to be. But yeah, like, I really would have, like, you know, tested him out on one of their outposts first if you were going to lead him anywhere. Somewhere a bit more dispensable to the insurrection than their fucking headquarters. You know, work your way up to introducing him to the captain face to face. At least then in their first interaction she wouldn't be able to punch him.
Jack tries to restore order. And I like this bit where he pulls out a small hanky from his flight suit chest pocket. I just love, like, the fact that it's actually called a hanky. Not like a handkerchief or a hanky.
It's the captain's hanky.
Yeah. His father had one, and now it's passed down to him.
Yeah.
That's what's keeping Hollister from being the captain. He doesn't have a hanky.
No hanky pocket. He has a hanky, but no pocket on his suit for it. It was like every day he, like, opens up a drawer, looks at his hanky, just like, one day I'll get a captain's suit with a hanky pocket. Like, when the old captain died, you think you, like, reverently, like, pull out the hanky and put it over their face.
Yeah.
Captain's hanky. Rest in peace with hanky, good sir.
And he starts introducing his team that he's brought. And what I find funny is that he introduces Tona first, not Daryl Beckler, who is a former trader and has helped him on many deals in the past. Just like, it shows how, like, warped his sort of priorities are, and how sort of, I don't know, pussy whipped he is by Tona, that he, like, introduces her.
Like I was saying, that, you know, the nepotism took no time at all to start sinking in with how he sort of, like, treated her after.
I bet
Daryl's
like, what the fuck? Come on.
I said, dude, I've worked on your ship for 10 years, Jack. Why are you introducing this girl before me? But yeah, just like, and apparently she is now chief engineer and scientist.
Yeah, I like the "and scientist." In my book, scientist isn't capitalized, but chief engineer is. So it's like, he went, she's chief engineer. Oh, and also scientist.
And scientist.
But that is like,
just, I mean, like, I mean, I guess you could, after giving him shit, you can make the case of bringing her if she has actually become his chief engineer and scientist. I mean, I'm not sure that, considering how precarious the situation is, I'm not sure I'd want my chief engineer and scientist to be on the sort of, like, first crew out in case anything does go wrong. But I mean, I guess you could argue that she'll have things to talk about with the insurrectionists. But it's, like, really? Chief engineer? They must have had engineers before Tona joined weeks ago, and one of them must have been in charge of engineering.
And obviously, like, engineer, scientist makes sense, but, like, chief? She literally just joined, and also...
You know, I could... I could understand her being chief scientist, because that would have been a position that Jack would have made up after Tona joined the crew, because as a trading ship, they wouldn't have had any scientists before. Mm-hmm. You know, that one, you know, it still would have been him being like, it's like, oh dear, you're my chief scientist. You're my only scientist. But you're my chief one. You're in charge of all the science. Pick some of your favourite crew and get to sciencing.
Somewhere on the back on the ship, the old chief engineer's like, he like, oh, somewhere there's like a shiver going down his spine when Jack says that.
Just like, yeah, just like sitting there crying into his quam pai.
But you got to earn chief, right? You can't just be like, you're now chief engineer.
Just. And
also, what a time to, like, because this is news to Tona, what a time to, like...
Yeah, apparently, just suddenly, you know, exactly, the actual chief engineer doesn't even fucking know that he's been replaced.
He's doing this promotion, like, in this tense meeting with the insurrectionists.
Yeah, with people with guns, just like, you know, I don't think they're not pointing them at each other anymore, but I'm pretty sure everyone's hands are still hovering. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, also, I'm promoting you to be like one of the top people on my ship. Just what? Like, that's just a really bizarre thing to do to her.
Also, yeah, doesn't
telling her
she
like
already
this.
Works for, like, whatever it was back at the thing with the warp core. Like, she works...
Yeah, she's already part of, like, the Ilmarian Republic's defence force or something. Like, basically, she's an army scientist, a military
isn't
scientist.
Isn't it a bit presumptuous to be like, you're now in my crew? Well, hang on. What if I don't want to be?
Yeah, just...
I had a good job.
Yeah, I was important. You're a trading captain.
I had life insurance. Benefits.
It's like, do you know what the military pays?
Yeah, it's just, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it is just very weird just springing it on her like that. I don't know. I mean, it's, like I say, this kind of treatment of Tona just gets worse as the book goes on, to be honest. I mean... Like, the thing that gets me is that if this was done knowingly, like, the way that Jack acts, this could be, like, interesting in, like, noting how badly he's behaving as a captain. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're ever meant to think he's doing anything other than the right thing, or at least an understandable thing, throughout the book. But so much of what he does is just wrong on so many levels. Just so questionable in, like, motives and actions. But oh well.
Yeah, and after introducing apparently just two people,
Daryl Becker. It's like, in case you didn't believe Jack when he said that his name was Daryl, we found out that on his suit he has his name, Daryl Beckler, printed on the left
breast.
That's
how you know that's his name.
Yeah, that's how you know Jack wasn't lying. It's like, come to agreement with Daryl here, pointed his name, Rory McIlroy, printed on his left breast.
You know nothing of your men.
I was like, what? Rory, what are you doing here? I thought I bought Daryl. Fuck. I was too busy staring at Tona's ass.
Yeah, so we're introduced to the commander, the insurrectionists, and this is where things get weird, where...
Yeah, this is interesting. This is probably the biggest change in the book that we've come across so far.
As we've mentioned in the past, we have different copies of the book. So Peter has the first edition, I guess you could call it.
The OG version.
And I have the re-released version. And there have been a few differences along the way. Like, just... Actually, most of them have been added mistakes in my one, which is interesting.
Yeah. I remember another mildly significant one was aging up Tona by, I can't remember, like 5 years or
make
something.
Make it a little less creepy.
Which makes it a little less creepy.
Just going back onto that, like, she's chief engineer and she's, like, really young.
Yeah, she's, like, 24 in this version, something like that. Mid-20s.
Not chief material.
Yeah, that does seem a bit young to be, to one... Like, even, like, back in her universe, to be in charge of, like, this massively important secret project anyway, two to be like that far high up in their science division anyway. And yeah, again, to be the best engineer that they have on the Tranquility either. That is kind
of... Well, it is the Tranquility,
odd, but...
so...
I mean, yeah, that one's less surprising than in the military.
I mean, Jack's the captain, so...
Yeah, but Hollister's his second in command. True. That just throws out all of our assumptions about crew competence. It might be that everyone else on the ship's fucking amazing at their job other than Jack, and that's why they do so adequately in the book.
So anyway, the difference here is that the commander's name in my book is Raven Kurzweil.
And in my book, it's Commander Devon Sharples.
For some reason.
No idea why.
I looked it up, and Kurzweil is a place in Devon. So that's the only connection I can think of between the two names.
I imagine that's a coincidence, though it is a very interesting coincidence.
Yeah. I mean, Lewis, if you want to let us know why did you change the names? It's quite interesting.
I'd be fascinated to know, because it's...
Which do you prefer?
I just...
Hashtag Raven Kurzweil or hashtag Devon Sharples? Shaples, what is it?
Sharples. Yeah. We need to find out what the people prefer. I mean, you know, like, I prefer Devon Sharples, but that's because I've already read through the book with her as Devon Sharples, you know, it's what you get used to. But maybe Kurzweil will grow on me with time.
Raven Kurzweil. Very odd.
Isn't Revan from, like, Star Wars?
It's
I'm sure there's a Darth Revan.
R-A-V-Y-N.
R-A-V-Y-N. Raven. Also, like a weird spelling of Raven.
Yeah.
Like, Raven. Okay, that's a diff... That's odd. Just odd. Like, I don't know what more comments we can make about it. It's just very curious.
Yeah. At least it's consistent in that it never becomes... Well, I haven't read yet the rest of the book, but it never becomes Devon.
I mean, we will have to see. That might just happen. like next... in a few chapters, it might just be Devon Sharples.
Devon Kurzweil.
But Raven Sharples. we'll have to see. That'll be a treat for us all to look forward to.
I like how she says that before you even try and think of trying to end the insurrectionist by killing me, there are hundreds of other people who are ready to stand up and take my place. As if, like, that's all it would take to sort of take down the insurrection.
Yeah, just shoot their leader. No fallbacks.
Yep.
You know, once she dies, everyone else will just pop their cyanide pills.
Well, I guess that's it. Jack, you're our new leader.
You killed her. Klingon promotion. Wait, and then just immediately she walks off after saying that to them. I just realised.
Yes.
I was like, before you try and end this insurrection by killing me, hundreds will take my place. And then just leaves. That's
so
it.
They waited there.
That's the end of the
they
parley.
They waited there for an hour for her to come and punch him, and then for him to introduce two members, and then for her to say, "You don't assassinate me," and then walk off.
Yep.
Good meeting. Like, that's how she was going to end it.
Yeah, she was happy with how things
what
had
was
gone.
If they didn't follow her, was she, like, trying to call their bluff? Imagine if they didn't follow her. She's like, oh, shit. I've got to go back in there. Are they following me?
I'm going to look like an idiot. I'm going to have to punch someone again.
Do you reckon she went into a different room and, like, punched someone, the wrong person? She went into, like, so many rooms, like...
There's just, like, so many people throughout the place with bleeding noses.
Not a hanky to dab.
That's why it took her arm.
Yeah.
She punched so many people. And there's hundreds of people there willing to take her place. Why did she introduce herself as Devon Sharples if she only ever wanted to be called Commander Sharples? That just seems to be messing
That's
with
true.
Her.
That's true, yeah. She does get very sort of insistent that... it's Commander Kurzweil. This is gonna get confusing.
It is a little
bit. It's Commander Kurzweil to you. Maybe we should come up with like a sort of mixture.
A portmanteau name.
Kurzweils or something, or Sharpwell.
It's Commander Sharpwell to you.
Yeah, so it's Commander Sharpwell to you, or just Commander. Like, very...
Revon Sharpwell.
Yeah, Revon Sharpwell. Okay.
We're definitely going to forget that the next time it comes
Revon up. Revon Sharpwell. I'm making a note of it. Okay. Yeah, never call her by her first name, apparently. But then you're right, why even bother saying it?
Yeah, little odd.
I guess he said his name. I also find it weird that he says his name like James Bond, like, I'm Captain Hunter. Jack Hunter. Just mm-hmm. say, I'm Captain Jack Hunter. She didn't say, yeah. I'm Commander Kurzweil. Oh, fucking hell. I'm Commander Sharpwell. Immediately.
Yeah. I've noticed him doing that a few times. He's definitely done that before mm-hmm. when introducing himself. He's a bit of an odd affectation.
Yeah, and so, as I said, they follow her as she walks away. And they, apparently there was a guy there with her called Colonel Lance Kindle, who is the, I guess he's just, like, one of her trade guys, because he's talking to Daryl, who is, and he's yeah. the insurrectionist opposite, so I'm guessing it's just the equivalent sort of trade officer. I like the fact, I like how he's Colonel Lance Kindle, and how it's Colonel Kindle. It's got a nice ring to it. Colonel Kindle.
Mm.
I like that.
I yeah. approve.
Nothing. Does have nothing a nice negative. Ring. I just like that. Colonel Kindle. He does have the look of a seasoned veteran. Stiff back, broad shoulders, and a crew cut that did nothing to hide the long scar down his left eye. Its pupil white.
How could a crew cut hide an no, eye it says, scar anyway?
Yeah, well, it says that did nothing.
I know, but...
Why even...
But why? Yeah. That's just such a weird thing to bring up, though. Like, like you'd expect it to. Like, you'd think the crew cut would... Like, I don't know, the way that's phrased makes it sound like you'd think it'd help distract from it, but of course it doesn't. Just why even
I guess he's saying... I guess what he's trying to say, maybe, is that he's proud of his sort of wounds, his battle wounds, that he's not willing to, like, hide it through his hair. But also, I don't know, he's meant to be the trade guy, right? I don't know. We don't know what his life has been. We don't know how he got that scar.
Exactly. I mean, we know that Jack just wanted to trade, but maybe this guy had the same dream, but he had to fight through years of war before he could get to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, true.
Not everyone's born lucky.
It says here that... no, I don't know. I thought it was something else.
Just, and, like, after Commander... Sharpwell.
Nice.
It is like done talking to Major Josel, the insurrectionist back that they had with them on the ship. She's sort of like talking to Jack in what is like another weirdly long exchange. Just like, from what the Major told me, you are not Imperials and neither are you of the civilian populace. And then Jack says, I'm afraid to disappoint you, but no, we are not Imperials and not members of the civilian population.
Yeah, not just...
In fact...
Not just like, no, we're not. Like, that would have done.
Why not just go, yes, that's correct, then carry on. In fact, we're not even from around here. Like, then he gets all sly and cagey, just like, let's just say it's a very complicated and long story, one that even we do not know the full extent.
Yeah.
Which and is just another...
It's also
sentence,
probably not the best sort of angle to take. It's already tense, and she doesn't really know much about them. And then to play the like sly card of like, oh, we're mysterious. Like, we're not from around here. It's just going to raise suspicions even more. Like, who are you? And also, I mean, we never got to the bottom of how they're so sure that they're not from of what's happened. You know, they're so sure that they're in another dimension. It's just.
I mean, I still think you're hung up on that too much. They found an alternate evil version of someone they knew.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like the thing in Inception, the spinning top. Like they know whether they're in the right universe if their Fargus is...
Quickly, check on Fargus.
He's still a sweet old man. We're here. Has he got a fat ass?
Or a fat ass gold ring hand.
This isn't the Fargus we know.
Evil! Bad Fargus, bad Fargus. Wrong universe.
Wrong ass.
But yeah, and the fact that Jack ends this with like a smirk, and also, quickly, the closest we get to Chucklevision this week, not even going to give it a fanfare because it's so disappointing. This is it. We get one smirk for Chucklevision. God, pull your finger out, Lewis.
Yeah, I know.
This is terrible. Gone through a real glut in Chucklevision the last few chapters. But still, but yeah, getting back to it, so ending it with a smirk, that's kind of like acting a bit smug around this lady, smug and very knowingly coy and sly around this lady that earlier he was like conscious, just like, I don't want to rile her because she's like constantly brimming with anger and rage and clearly unstable as hell. And he's like, you know, this sounds like a minor provocation here. Just like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's a long story, you know, maybe we'll tell you. Smug,
I like
smug.
I like his reasoning of, he knew there were things that they did not want to tell him, so he would not tell them some things too. Seemed only fair. It's so, like, childish.
It's like, I can understand the mentality of wanting to hold some facts from them, but just the way he describes it does just make him seem so petty and ill thought out in the way he goes about it.
And yeah, how she says that she's not going to imprison them because of, you know, the insurrectionist tells them of what happened in the last station. But him escaping had nothing to do with, like, his ability. It was just the terrible guarding of the prison. Like, she could imprison them and just do a better job and it would work, you know?
Well, I mean, By the same sort of like process of why it was mad for Fargus to like take them prisoner, antagonize them, given what we know about it, the Tranquility could probably just like fuck up this asteroid and the whole base, given how big it is floating around.
I also
out
think
there.
I've actually misread, and I think what she's saying is that, like, because you freed our insurrectionists, we're not going to imprison you because, you know, you helped us. That's what I think she's actually saying. So, I guess that's fair.
Yeah.
But they're free to move about the facility, but not the restricted areas.
Yeah, it's still weird that she was even considering imprisoning them. You know, considering they came... And even if she was considering, like, trying to take them hostage, why would you ever say
that?
Yeah,
I'm not going to imprison them. I'm not going to kill you, by the way. Okay, I wasn't thinking you were. But...
That's a strangely specific denial. It's like, you know, we came here to be your friends at the instruction of one of your men after we rescued them. It never crossed our mind that you would arrest us when we sat down in here, actually, until you mentioned it just now. Now we're kind of looking at you a bit sideways about what's going to happen in our stay here.
It must be a good deal, though, because it's what Jack could have done. If it was his ship and they were his visitors. So, you know, she made the right choice.
Well, yeah, like, I do find it funny that just, like, even Jack realizes how bad an idea it is to just drive his giant spaceship up to the insurrectionist base. Because she says, just like, you can't leave the safety of the asteroid belt until we know you've not given our position away. And Jack's like, yeah, that's fair. I'd have done the same thing if the situations were reversed. So he knows how he's just, like, comparatively drawn, like, a big line towards the insurrectionist base. And that, you know, they're now, like, going to be on full security and, like, bunker down until they're sure no one's followed him. Again, why did anyone think this was a good idea? Why did they meet here, of all places? He's mad.
So one thing I find odd about the end of this chapter is that... So the Commander Revan Sharpwell, she says that, I must tend to other matters, but if you wish to explain to me your long tale, then I will be in my office. And then she walks off and is saluted by the insurrectionists. And then it goes on to describe what the sort of what the group did. So Tona would liaison with the chief engineer, Daryl would negotiate for food, and Jack would head to the commander's office and have a chat with her. Like, immediately. She's like, I'm going to go do other stuff, but if you want to talk, come to my office. He's just, like, immediately going to her office. Like, I just find that odd. But then he doesn't even go to her office. He goes back to the ship and helps repair. Why is the chief engineer not going back to the ship and repairing? I don't understand. What's he going to repair anyway? Like, as far as I know, they had that scuffle with as they were leaving the combat observatory station. And since then, they've been flying towards here, which has been a long flight. Yeah. Surely that's they've, like, patched up.
Well, you know, I guess there's only so much you can do while you're flying through space at like, light speed, or even though they claim it isn't light speed.
Still, he went back, and as it says here, that he rarely did anything other than order other people around, because he spends most of his time sitting in the bridge, being the captain. So he literally went back to, apparently, like, begin repairs, but didn't actually help repair. And again, why didn't the head engineer?
He went back to direct the repairs.
But he left Hollister in charge. He can do it.
Hollister was already doing it. He just let Jack think that he was telling them something new. It's like Kozai sits down, chief engineer, first you've been demoted. Also, get on to the engineering work. He's just in between his disconsolate sobs. He's just like, I was already
it also leaves Tona with a very vague job. Like, she's going to liaison with the chief engineer. Okay? Like, she's recently become chief engineer. Like, she's going to liaison with this person who's presumably been chief engineer for a while, the insurrectionist.
Well, apparently she's like a prodigy. Like, earlier on, it's just like, she was just like walking through the facility, busy pointing out flaws in systems she noticed as she was passing. So, you know, apparently she knows how this alternate universe tech works better than they do.
I also don't understand, because she seems to go to the cargo holds to find boxes of food, water, equipment. Wasn't that what Daryl would do? Negotiate with food? We don't really hear what Daryl does, because it says that he would negotiate with food, they would do in return for the ship, for the help with the ship.
Which I think means helping them, like, repair it and shit,
but then,
I'm guessing.
That's all we hear about Daryl, and then Tona heads the cargo holds and doesn't appear to meet with the engineer at all. And yet, just looks at all the food.
Yeah, she says she goes there to meet.
Yeah, and she had been
engineer.
Told that the engineer would be there. After about half an hour searching for the cargo holds, she found them. And then there's no mention of her meeting the engineer.
Yeah, she just ends up looking at these large tanks of water and weapons.
Wow.
She's amazed at the resourcefulness of the insurrectionist movement. Well, you had to be to defeat an empire as powerful as the Imperium.
They had water and food.
And
the most
weapons.
Advanced of resources.
Well, you can't win an insurrection without water and food. Just one isn't enough, Louis.
That's true. Tanks of water as well.
But yeah, that is weird that he just drops her off one where it sounds like, as you say, Daryl should be heading as the sort of like supply deck to meet the engineer, who then isn't there. She's just like standing in this massive warehouse going, wow, water.
And what's the like armed sort of soldiers that they brought with them? What are they doing? Guarding each of them?
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't mention
any of them having like an escort when they walk around
the base.
They just seem
like sort of familiar with the surroundings. Like, Tona's just walked off.
Yeah, like, she's just following the directions of the soldiers. Like, you know, given how freaky paranoid the commander was, you would have thought that they would have had, like, chaperones all the time. And you would have thought, given how mental she is, anyone important would have security people with them at all times.
She's like an unidentified person walking around the insurrectionist HQ. You think it would raise some, like, alarm if you saw someone you didn't recognise walking around, armed as well.
Yeah, it's quite bizarre that she didn't have anyone just
and she's
take
just like
there.
Asking people
why
like,
she doesn't have everyone
the,
with her at all times.
Where's the cargo holds? Oh, okay, person I've never seen before. I'll tell you, they're just down there.
Yeah,
where are all of our supplies?
The supplies for the entire insurrection are down there.
What's that? Someone I've never met. Like, you want to know where all of our food is?
And they were talking about how much more security they had than the Tranquility staff. You know, it's like they had all these people in here and they knew there was more outside willing to pile in. How much can the security team be doing? I mean, they were standing around guarding them for an arm before. Why did they not have one or two security members, like, just given to follow each of these guys? One, to help them get around. Two, to stop them going into places that they're not supposed to go into, like these restricted areas. Like, we don't know how clearly labelled they are or anything. Like, Tona could just happen into them while wandering about this massive base she's never been in before, entirely by accident. And then, yeah, to stop suspicion by going, it's fine, this is new, you know, she's under Sharpwell's protection. Yeah, like, what are these people that were guarding them doing now? Like, how much security is there in the space that, you know, after having them all sitting there for an hour, they're now just all gone back to their work. Now it doesn't matter. All of these people just wandering around their base.
Who trust them all. It's very odd. And this isn't... Let's not forget, it's not just a base. It's like their headquarters. So You'd imagine it being pretty well defended.
Yeah, you'd think that, the commander, she's right to be paranoid of them, but it's weird how she's gone from being, like, so paranoid from the outset to now just being like, wander around. I'm sure no one will get, will question you, a random woman walking around the base.
I think we've had this exact same discussion back with Fargus, in that they arrived and were suddenly just like, oh, there's no guards anymore. Like, they were all very spread out and... Yeah, it seems to be a recurring problem with these stations. Lack.
Yeah. Horrible security teams.
Yeah, and so that's pretty much where the chapter ends. We learn that over the next few days, Jack and Tona managed to get a lot of work done on the ship, and they managed to blossom their relationship even more, and that Tona doesn't even need any quarters. She just stays in Jack's. Getting a bit saucy there.
Yeah, such romance.
Can't wait to see how that carries on.
We're going to have a hard time between reading this and reading Twilight later on picking the best love story.
Yeah, I've sort of accidentally read a bit of the next chapter, and it's a bit of a steamy one.
Accidentally.
Yeah. I mean, it starts with Tona and Jack sleeping quietly and naked in his bed. Quietly naked.
Spoilers, Louis.
Well, it's a cliffhanger. It's to get people hooked.
I mean, you know, it's got my attention. Let me tell you. But yeah, so we've got that to look forward to. More romance in the Tranquility. But just before we finish up, I mean, a little thing about the warp drive. So it's been. Why has it had to have been... They're talking about how that they've been repairing the ship and installing the warp drive properly, like, sort of like saying that they basically jerry-rigged it when they ran it before, which is understandable, seeing as they were being crushed by a wormhole,
but
which
didn't
doesn't
they set
make
up
sense,
the warp drive before they
on.
Left? Oh, I guess after going through, it became not set up?
For some reason, they've not been able to power the warp drive down. Though I'm not clear what the warp drive's been doing all this time, if it's not been powered down. Mm. Like, because, you know, they don't keep flitting into different realities every second. It's not been mentioned anywhere that their ship's faster now
also,
that the warp
drive's
running.
Also, it's very vague, like, properly install the warp drive. Okay? Like...
I mean, it... Yeah.
How is it not properly installed? What's...
I mean, yeah, it was working.
Yeah, as far as they know. The chief engineer said it was working, so...
It must have been. So, apparently, like, the Tranquility needs to be entirely shut down, which actually must have been quite a pain, because, you know, the crew of the Tranquility are still floating outside in the asteroid field, because the... because, you know, the ship's too big or whatever, you know, it couldn't dock before. That's why they had to shuttle in. So does that mean that every member of the Tranquility either had to be in space suits or pulled down to the insurrectionist base while they did these repairs or something?
Yeah. No idea.
Sounds like a right kerfuffle. But I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I guess they had no time. I kind of don't know why they didn't, like, stop and turn off this, untested, you know, weird warp drive and install it properly if they were going to, as soon as they warped into this universe. Like, you know, before they went back to the Combat Observatory Station, they still thought they were in their universe. They just thought something was up with their ship. I still probably... If it was so much of a worry, I probably would have stopped the ship there and tried to turn off the warp drive or whatever. I mean, maybe not install it properly if that's such an in-depth process, but I would have turned it off, given that having it on managed to warp their ship. You know, they knew that much then. Warp their ship and apparently destroy a wormhole or something. You know, that's enough to make you think, you know, maybe we don't want this on all the time. I mean, I still think it's possible that it actually warped all of their, like, reality and memories too, but we'll see. But, yeah, despite all we've heard about it, we still have no idea how the warp drive works or what it does or anything, and this little aside to it just makes it again clear how vague the whole thing is. Just, what was it doing running hot for the last few weeks? What effect did that have on anything? And what effect will it have now the ship's got it fitted now? What does it actually do? Because, you know, they've not been using it since they moved through. And, I don't know. I know I went into yelling at the warp drive back like 10, well, not 10 chapters ago, like 8 chapters ago. I won't get into it again. But just what does it actually do? It makes no sense. But yeah, got a little bit off topic there. But yeah, I think that's it from me, ending on the steamy note of Jack and Tona's romance.
Yeah, it's, I think we're in for a good chapter next week.
Yeah, like if you've read ahead, you've read it more recently than me, Louis. Like, I've read it before, but not for a few years. You know, you've got a better idea of what's coming next than me for once. I only know roughly what's going to happen. You've already lived it. But yeah, so I guess we'll be wrapping up. Sorry for the slight delay over the holiday season in getting this one out, because we know there's so many listeners out there that care. You know, our loyal fan base. But yeah, you know, just, you know, Christmas and the holidays, it's a busy time. My computer's kind of half dead, which didn't help. But yeah, your two bookends, hope you had a good Christmas and a new year, and we'll see you next week, if we pull our finger out and record on time, where we'll read chapter 12.
See ya.
Goodbye.